Our brother from Long Island, Arwa Long Island. He is, the name of his talk is Why Take Refuge in Jehovah. Brother John Hayden, please.
When we arrived, they gave us a ration card and an ID number. And we were assigned to the camp. When we got there, we received a plot number and a street number. And we made our way to that location. Well, as a family, we got busy right away. We started making mud bricks to build our walls. And they gave us a plastic sheet, which we used to put on our roof. That ration card that we got, we get to use every other Wednesday. We go and line up at the canteen, and we get basic food supplies. We get corn, get peas, oil, and salt. Sometimes we even receive a bar of soap, but that has to last us the entire month. According to the UN Refugee Agency, by mid-2021, for over 94 million forcibly displaced people, this is reality. But they're not the only ones. Around the world, hundreds of millions of people suffer because of poverty, famine, unemployment, and racial hatred in their own countries. Yes, people are overwhelmed by what they see every day and what they experience. They want relief from fear, from sickness, from crime, and really the sense of hopelessness that seems to be soaked through all parts of humanity. Even fear of death moves millions of people to seek advice on what happens. But they get contradicting ideas, contradicting beliefs, which just winds up making them feel frustrated, confused, and bitter. Well, when we were children and we were frightened, who did we turn to? We went to mom and dad, didn't we? Why? Because we trusted them. They make us feel safe and secure. But now as adults, we see so many frightening things happening every day. Where can we run? Well, today, we're going to be talking about true refuge and where it can be found. Now, we just talked for a couple of moments about bad things, all the things that are happening in the world. And we see all of this and how it's affecting and compounding problems for mankind around the world. And the world says, what do? We've got to fix these things. But it's kind of like waking up one morning and you've got a rash all over your body. And on top of that, you're aching. And you think to yourself, oh man, I got to get some ointment because this just itches and I ache. I've got to get something to take for the pain. But what else is going through your mind? What else are you thinking about this? What's causing this? What is the underlying problem? You see, the world sees all the problems that are going on around us, and they want to try and fix this problem. They want to try and fix that one. But in reality, isn't what they're doing just treating symptoms of a greater underlying issue? You see, what they don't understand is that what's really causing the problem is spiritually related. Now, how is it that we can say this? Well, the Bible helps us to understand that life and real happiness is directly linked to God and obedience to his laws. We're helped to understand this if we take our Bibles and we start off by going to Ecclesiastes, and we're going to take a look at chapter 12 and verse 13. That's Ecclesiastes 12, and we're going to look at the 13th verse. There it says, the conclusion of the matter, everything having been heard, is fear the true God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole obligation of man. Now, people today might read something like that, saying, fear the true God. Well, that's not a very appealing prospect, is it? But in what type of way do people think of fear when they think of fearing someone? Well, isn't it when dealing with someone who's a tyrant, someone who's saying, you're going to fear me or else? Well, what if we were to think of it, though, in a healthy way? The way that our Creator intended us to think of it. Like a child who wants to please a loving father. You see, that type of fear, that comes from a different place. It comes from love and respect. This is the type of fear that moves us to obey him out of that love and respect in order to keep his commandments, as that verse brought out. Jehovah God wants us to be happy, and he shows us how to do it. But we have to understand that it's only Jehovah that can give meaning to our lives. You see, Jehovah God created us with spiritual needs, and because of this, we are actually dependent on him. Now, another way that we're helped to understand this, if we take our Bibles once again, and we turn to the book of Jeremiah. And that's Jeremiah chapter 10. And the verse we're going to look at is verse 23. It says, I well know, O Jehovah, that man's way does not belong to him. It does not belong to man who is walking, even to direct his step. Plainly, the Bible helps us to appreciate that man doesn't have the ability to successfully direct themselves. We might think of it like an inexperienced hiker. Now, you might like hiking, but you may not have a lot of experience, and you want to go explore someplace, maybe a new forest, maybe a wilderness in some far-off land that you've never been to before. But if you don't have the experience and you go off and you don't allow an experienced guide to help you, well, you're putting your life in danger. And in a similar way, the person who thinks that they can direct their life without Jehovah God showing them the way is doing just that. They're putting their life in danger. Well, fine, you say. You know, if we were created with this dependence, with this spiritual need, then when we take a look around us, then where did things go wrong? Why are things the way they are? Well, the first human couple, Adam and Eve, they abandoned their relationship with Jehovah God. The Garden of Eden, where they were first placed, really the entire world was theirs to discover. Jehovah had put it all there for them. They could enjoy and develop it however they wanted. We stop and contemplate it for a moment or two. They had everything that they could need, a beautiful home. They had satisfying work that they could look forward to. And they had a wonderful relationship with Jehovah God, their creator. And they could do all these things, not just for a few years, but forever. But Jehovah, he gave them one command. Don't eat from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. He said if they disobeyed that law and they ate from that tree, they would die. Now, why would he do that? Well, the tree was symbolic of Jehovah's sovereignty. It marked the limits of man's authority. And as the creator, he had the right to say that. It really wasn't a big ask when you think of everything that they had. But as we can see from our picture, they ate from it. They turned their backs and they rejected the one who they needed the most, Jehovah God. And with what results? Well, let's take a look at the immediate results in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 17. That's Genesis chapter 3, beginning in verse 17. And to Adam, Jehovah God said, because you listened to your wife's voice and ate from the tree concerning which I gave you this command, you must not eat from it. Cursed is the ground on your account. In pain, you will eat its produce all the days of your life. It will grow thorns and thistles for you, and you must eat the vegetation of the field. In the sweat of your face, you will eat bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. So they were driven out of the Garden of Eden. They were cut off from the tree of life, and as we get the idea from our picture, they eventually died. But what did their actions mean for the rest of mankind? For us? Well, again, this is explained to us in Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. That is why, just as through one man, Adam, sin entered into the world and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because they had all sinned. Now, because Adam fathered children only after he became a sinner, sin was passed on to them like a genetic defect. And because of this, all of the physical and emotional problems that we see, the things that we seek refuge from, war, crime, famine, and suffering and death, these things are the reality that we face. What we are helped to appreciate in this short time is that refuge must first be spiritually based. We've learned that we're dependent on Jehovah, and we have seen the consequences of turning away from him. We mention this because it's something that we need to take seriously. You know, there are some today that consider themselves Christians. They say that they are interested in spiritual things, but their actions betray that they're not really taking it seriously. In fact, in the book of Revelation, Jesus spoke about these ones, and he actually called them a name. He called them lukewarm. How'd you like to go through life with that as your moniker? John, here comes John, lukewarm. It's not my favorite. You know, and especially when you think of other synonyms we could say for lukewarm: unenthusiastic, listless, indifferent. Definitely not flattering. But it helps us to appreciate that ones like this aren't really satisfying their spiritual needs. They aren't taking in refuge in Jehovah. And why do they do this? It's because of self-reliance. It's because of relying on material things or their own or human ability instead of looking to Jehovah for guidance. And this should be a very strong reminder for us. If we want to make Jehovah our refuge, then we need to examine our priorities. For instance, what would be our answer if we were to ask ourselves two specific questions? The first one: is my spirituality, as well as my relationship with Jehovah, in first place? Second, am I making Jehovah my refuge? Only we can answer those questions. But it's absolutely vital that we do, because true refuge can only be found in Jehovah. So how do we do this? How is it possible? Well, to consider this, let's turn to Proverbs 18 and verse 10. That's Proverbs 18 and verse 10. There it says, "The name of Jehovah is a strong tower. Into it the righteous one runs and receives protection." Now, if we take a look at our picture that's up here right now, in ancient times, towers were sometimes built as a safe place in case of an attack. Now, we take a look at this, and of course, this is a tower that's still standing. Back in the day, that would be cutting edge. But think of yourself living in that time. you're working away. You see it off on the land, but you've got your regular everyday chores. Your family's working at things. You're gardening, you're planting, you're working with the animals. And it's another day, beautiful day on this occasion. And suddenly you notice in the distance a group of men on horseback, and you can just make out that they're carrying weapons, that they are those band of thieves that you've heard reports about. Now you look over and you see the tower in the distance, and you think, it's a good thing that that tower is over there on the edge of my land. No, you're not thinking that. The first thing you want to do is you gather up your family, you get together, and you start running towards it, don't you? Why? Because you know it's the only place that you can get safety. If you're in danger, the tower is useless unless you run to it, unless you make the effort and act towards getting to it. It's the same thing with Jehovah's name. But there's more involved than just knowing a name. We've just talked about action is required. The verse in Proverbs brought out that the righteous one runs towards it. Well, how do we do this? It involves knowing and trusting Jehovah. It means living in harmony with his standards. The name Jehovah literally means he causes to become. And when we think about it, it should remind us about his attributes, his qualities, and really his purpose. So we make him our refuge. As Matthew 6 verse 33 says, we do this by seeking first the kingdom and his righteousness. Like running towards that tower, it requires action and resolve and a focused effort. But in addition to the action, we also need to appreciate how Jehovah has, in a sense, opened the door for us. Now, let's step back a little bit. We're going and running towards that tower. We've got the family. We're heading there. And we've recognized the danger. You're going with everything you've got towards that tower. If there was a gold medal for running scared, you would be world champion. You get to that door. You're gasping for breath. And when you finally get there, the door is barred shut. You can't get in. You look back at the bandits that are coming in. They're bearing down on you. How do you feel at that moment? You feel hopeless? Without hope? Well, because of what Adam and Eve did, mankind, in a sense, became victims. We had no means of accessing that tower. But on the basis of the ransom sacrifice, Jehovah, in a sense, opened that door for us. So we get to the door. Let's back up again. We're making that run. We get to the tower, and the door opens. The family floods in. We get in. We're on the floor. Everybody's panting, sweating, and the door closes in behind. And you realize you're safe. You take a couple of moments, and then the one who opened the door for you comes up, and he looks and says, "Don't worry. You're safe now. I'll give you some things so you can get yourself cleaned up, and maybe we can spend a little bit of time together." In a figurative sense, Jehovah has given us a chance to get clean from sin and the opportunity to have a relationship with him. So let's take a couple of moments and think about what having a relationship with Jehovah means. Now, first off, we've got the privilege of prayer. Let's think about what this means, or discuss what this means, by looking at some scriptures. We're going to take a look at two. The first one is at Psalm 65 and verse 2. That's Psalm 65 and verse 2. So how is Jehovah described here? It says Jehovah. It says, "O hearer of prayer, to you people of all sorts will come." Keep that thought in mind. Let's go over one chapter, and we're going over to the 66th Psalm, and we're going to look at verse 19. There it says, but God did hear. He paid attention to my prayer. From two verses, we learn some very important things, that not only that he hears prayers, but also that he pays attention to them. Now, people today want to talk about who they know and who they have contact with, but how about this for name dropping? This is the creator and the ruler of the universe. And the scriptures talk about the fact that he has chosen to involve himself personally in our prayers and our lives. Praying to Jehovah is a very real means of obtaining refuge in any type of situation. It doesn't matter if it's physical attacks by men, medical problems, emotional difficulties. We can call on Jehovah with confidence that he really does listen. Also, the fact that he can and he wants to provide relief to any situation that we may face. Think of the Bible account of Jonah, for example. Now, this is a man who made a bad decision and thought that the belly of this fish that he was in was going to be the end of him. What did he do? He cried out to Jehovah. He apologized. He thanked him for not letting him drown. But he apologized and promised to do what he was supposed to do. What was the result? Well, the fish went and threw him up, put him out into dry land, and he carried on with what he was supposed to do. Don't know if he ever ate fish again, but he carried out what he was supposed to do. Now, that's one very direct example. But sometimes the answer that we may receive may not be what we were expecting. For instance, this time, let's talk about Jesus when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, he was praying. He was concerned about dying, and he knew that he would be considered a blasphemer. He had the weight of mankind on his shoulders, and he knew what was coming. What did he say? He said, Father, if you wish, remove this cup from me. Well, Jehovah didn't remove what had to happen, but he did help him. He sent an angel to strengthen him. Now, on the outset, we might look at this and go and say, wow, that's incredible. And from our viewpoint, it would be if an angel showed up to us, but to Jesus, who had lived in heaven before, do you think an angel appearing to him to comfort him would have the same sort of effect that it would be to us? He could have turned around and said, hey, I made you. Still, it was just what he needed. Perhaps it was one of his favorite little brothers that came to calm him and to strengthen him to carry on. What does this teach us? Well, the answer that Jehovah may provide may not be what we are expecting, but it will be what we need. In addition to prayer, Jehovah also provides refuge through his Spirit-directed organization. Now, let's consider a few of these things. First, we have, of course, the Bible and our Bible-based publications. What do they give us? Well, scriptural counsel and protection. The Watchtower itself has stated, and I quote, worldly counselors and psychologists can never hope to approach the wisdom and understanding that Jehovah displays. His understanding is beyond recounting. Rather than lean on the wisdom of prominent men of the world or on our own uninformed emotions, let us look to Jehovah and his word for mature advice. Does this mean that the world's counselors are useless? Not at all. They can help in some circumstances, but the fact is that Jehovah can help in all situations. Next, there are the elders. Now, these spirit-anointed men, or appointed men, are responsible for humbly and lovingly caring for the congregation to provide comfort and refuge for its members. We have, as another example, our congregation meetings like we're enjoying today. How many times have you heard a brother get on the platform and begin the meeting with saying, help us to put away the cares of this whole world for just a couple of hours? Doesn't that help us to appreciate just how much the meetings are a place of refuge and refreshment for us? We have music that is produced. We have our kingdom songs. We have our original songs that we get on the broadcast. Haven't we seen firsthand in our broadcast how they've helped those who have endured persecution? And of course, there's our ministry. Now, how does that provide refuge for us? Well, it keeps our minds and our hearts focused on God's word and the hope that lies ahead for us. It can also bring us joy as we share the truth with others. It can help us to be focused on God's word and help them to find true comfort and hope as well. Have we been taking advantage of these things? Great. That's fantastic. But remember that we have to keep on taking refuge in Jehovah and all the things that he provides for us. Because the world shows us at Revelation that all the so-called refuge that the world provides is not going to last. Let's take a look at the book of Revelation chapter 6. That's Revelation chapter 6, and verse. We're going to begin in verse 15. Speaking about the end of the system of things, begins in verse 15 by saying, then the kings of the earth, the high officials, the military commanders, the rich, the strong, every slave and every free person hid in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they keep saying to the mountains and to the rocks, fall over us and hide us from the face of the one seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Because the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? At the end of the system of things, people are going to be looking for a place to hide, but they're not going to be able to find one. Babylon the Great, the world empire of false religion, has already failed them. The political and commercial organizations aren't going to be able to provide any sort of security or any kind of help in any way. Nothing. Not even literal caves will shelter them from the coming judgments. Refuge. The only true refuge that guarantees life comes from Jehovah God. Do our thoughts echo the words of the psalmist in the 57th Psalm? Let's turn there for our final scripture. Psalm 57, verse 1. Show me favor, O God. Show me favor. For I take refuge in you. And in the shadow of your wings, I take refuge until the troubles pass. Jehovah will be our refuge if we continue taking in knowledge of him, if we look to apply Bible principles in our lives, and if we maintain a good personal relationship with him. Remember, Jehovah isn't indifferent about our choices. As we considered, he cares deeply about what are the choices we make and what we decide to do. He is a loving father. He wants the best for us, and he encourages each of us to take full advantage of what he has provided. He is standing before us saying, come here. Let me protect you. And being shown this love and concern, what will you and I do?
Well, thank you very much, Brother Hayden.